Hello, hello. I'm Sheldon Kopman, the founder of Naked Ape, and you're listening to my top 10 at 10.
On the street, on the air.
It is TKZ. Hits after hits. They produced amazing music, and I'm not surprised we're starting here. That's purely because I know Sheldon.
That's it.
I could have started somewhere else, though.
Hey. Where was that? Where is that?
Because your taste in music is very eclectic. It's too broad, actually. This man listens to everything. And I said, send me 10 songs. He sends me a spreadsheet.
It's hard to choose 10, man. I mean,
I know.
That's difficult.
It's really very difficult.
You
know? Welcome, my brother.
Thank you, brother. Thank
you well?
I'm very well. How are you, man?
Looking good, man. As always.
We try.
No.
You.
No, you do it. We try, you do it.
No, we try. Bro.
You see, the problem with Sheldon Kopman, guys, let me tell you now. Everything he wears, you want. He's a moving billboard for what he does. Then you go to his studio, he says, make me what you're wearing. And he does. You put it on, you're like, it doesn't even match my voice.
It enhances the voice.
Sheldon, when did it hit you that you like making clothes?
Well, yeah, when did it hit me? I think in 2005, I would say that it was the time where I said I have to explore the space of design.
Yeah.
I was fashion editing at the time, Elle Magazine.
Oh.
Prior to Elle Magazine was Y-Mag, freelancing for True Love. And, of course, styling everybody in town for all various videos from Abashanti to Tebe to...
What?
Yeah, it was a lot during the late 90s, shall I say.
Yeah, 97, that 96, 97 era.
Absolutely,
yeah.
into early 2000s. And
that's
then,
right.
You know, you had beautiful brands like Stone Cherry, Bongiwe Walaza. You know, you had the likes of Clive Rundle. You know, it had San Goddess. And these guys were, I mean, the early part of the design era... That was captivated on the runways of SA Fashion Week, etc., were really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I got the opportunity to curate some of those collections and also, you know, help style some of those collections as well.
Okay.
And a lot of the designers were exposing their challenges in terms of, hey, man, you know, we have issues with fabric, we've got issues with production, this, that, and the other. And I never really knew. I thought it was easy. As a stylist, you say, you know what?
Yeah.
This will look nice like this and like that. Put a bit of this then, put a bit of that then. They were like, you make it sound so easy. Until I got into it myself. So it took me 5 years to actually just get my jacket block correct and a shirt block. So from 2005 to 2010, it was just crafting. And I'd self-educated myself, gone to different places, gone to China, gone to Thailand, gone to India, and just, you know, trying to make this beautiful jacket that fits me. And I was never satisfied. I mean, you know, having the mind of a so-called perfectionist
it
can be to your detriment at times.
Exactly,
you know?
So,
yeah, I finally got it right. And in 2010, actually launched a collection, which I thought was going to be...
The best thing?
Ever.
and threw
all the eggs into that basket. And... yeah, they all cracked.
No!
It was probably one of the most, eye-opening experiences of the industry. Realizing how difficult the industry was when it comes to design.
No.
Into product development, into all things fashion and the challenges that you have, you know. It was enormous, so I just kept on. I thought, okay, that's it, you know. Close doors, try something else. And I'm like, nah, I really, really love this. So I've always liked fashion from the time that I'd come to Johannesburg at the age of 9, you know.
From where?
From Pietermaritzburg, my home.
You're a PMB boy?
I'm a PMB boy.
What?
54 Jacks, Hoodlands. That's where I'm from.
Yeah.
And yeah, so when I got to Johannesburg, I mean, we were staying in Cliptown. First day I was at Orlando Stadium.
Yeah.
And Pirates was playing Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I'd never felt such exhilaration, like such strength and power and voice, you know, just power.
And you were young.
Young, and I was just watching people. I was like, whoa. And then we went to Cocky Tubu's house. He used to run a Shabin at the time.
Yes, Cocky Tubu.
And
he was a radio presenter as well, by the way.
From 702.
Yes.
And the style that I was exposed to. I mean, Dax of London and this and that. I was, wow. Look at these people, so well dressed.
Yeah, ekas.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, matched, like just beautiful. And I mean, it was that era of, how would I say, you know, the sort of Sophia Town coming into the modernization of Sophia Town.
Yeah.
You know? And then you also had this era of Bansula that was just lurking in the background, which
was considered
as this thug apparel, which was so bad.
When it was just actually a rebellion culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was in awe of all of this. I was like, this is just absolutely incredible. And then I was also exposed to a lot of people during my schooling year in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
That, you know, the first time I saw GQ magazine was at the Cedric Miller's house, you know, him and Adrian.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at the stuff. And I used to be staring at the pages of this GQ, all this stack of GQs that they had. You couldn't get GQ locally. It's the same with album covers, you know.
Yes, all the vinyls.
And, you know, seeing Miles on the cover and seeing this one on the cover. Just beautiful fashion. So I think there was a calling from a young age. I never knew that it'll take me that long to get into the space of design. But from styling, from modeling into styling, into fashion editing, into show production, etc., it was great. But there was a certain fulfillment that I needed in my life. And that was the calling for design. So,
So I started with modeling?
Don't go down that road.
You knew I was going to take you there.
But you know,
let me tell you something. I have never seen a man who's proud of his work but shy to face the people who are enjoying his work. I have never. I attended South African Fashion Week this year. You were showcasing your new work.
Right.
And one of my gripes about your showcase was you
not coming on the runway.
Thank you.
All the way on the runway.
How about Tumamudim? Here's this man showing us this artwork. And everybody's going, what? Wow. And this, and I remember belting out, I was sitting next to a lady, and I was like, there goes my money. And she belted out laughing. And now, it's time for the designer to come on, walk that runway so that we can see him. Oh, Sheldon, doing a, hey. There by the corner and then going back. I'm like, how about that? So you were more, you are aware of the runway.
Yes. It's not my space anymore. Those boots have been hung up a long time ago, you know. I decided to exit that at the age of 24. You know? So, yeah. But it was a good journey. I spent quite a bit of time in New York, and that's where I kind of like found my feet in the space of what I wanted to do as a stylist.
You know?
I remember being on a shoot with, there was a stylist, Patty Wilson. I did this video with Diana Ross where I played a lead.
No.
And we were shooting in...
Which music video is this?
It's called I'm Gone. You'll see it.
Gone!
You need to see it.
Let's Google!
It was before the time of social media.
Yeah!
I'm not trying to tell
It's on YouTube,
age.
Though.
You can find it.
Diana Ross, I Am Gone. We need to see Sheldon.
And the stylist came with so much wardrobe. And this was for about maybe four looks for Miss Ross, and then two looks for myself. But the whole room was full of clothes, racks and racks of clothes. And I spent a lot of time with the stylist speaking to her. And I'm like, this is remarkable. Why do you need so much for, so few looks? And she was like, this is the way this industry is. And I looked at her, I saw her, and I loved her humility and her presence and just her energy overall. And I said, I like this part of the industry. So you learn a lot as a model because, I mean, if you want to.
Yes.
You learn about art direction.
As long as you allow your eyes.
Absolutely.
To see it.
It was a fantastic exposure. I left the country at the age of 21. I was in Paris. I was in Istanbul. I was in Milan. I was in Vienna, you know, Düsseldorf, New York, all within a very, very short space of time. And the exposure was just great, just to see what was going on. And in those years, we still used to shoot on film. So it was Polaroid, it was this. So models had to be quite immaculate.
Yeah,
their
yeah.
presence,
yeah.
the way they approached themselves in society or just at a casting. It was a responsibility compared
yeah.
to what it is now in this age of digital.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was good. It was beautiful. I loved, learned a lot. I'll always be, hanging over the shoulder of a photographer, seeing what they are doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And understanding all of that. That's how I learned, you know.
What is that one pearl that yeah. the stylist, or what is the one thing she said that anchored your decision to say, this is where I'm going? Because that's the first thing you did, right? By styling.
Yeah. I think it was her attention to detail.
Oh.
Because she was like, as much as there are 5 white shirts here, there's only one that's going to work.
Oh, you're
you know
dead.
What I mean?
Listen
so
to
I
that
was
now.
Like, okay, so it's all in the detail. And that's what it's about. And I mean, that's pretty much what I do in design. It's not about how visible the detail is, but how functional it is and what makes it aesthetically pleasing to the eye. You know, it has to morph within the space as opposed to be outstanding. There are people who design that way for it to be outlandish and outstanding.
Yes,
and,
yes. And they have their mark.
And completely avant-garde. But then I like that in terms of being able to show a certain kind of quality. The textile yeah. drives you at the end of the day. So for me, textile is everything. And my textile knowledge is quite good.
Mm.
So the textile is what inspires the design, as opposed to the other way around for me.
Oh, you don't draw and then go for the material?
It doesn't work for me. And I remember, I'm not a trained... I've not been institutionalized when it comes to design. It's
okay.
something that
okay.
I'm a free thinker in the space.
Okay.
So
which explains a lot in terms of what you do.
There's okay. no boundaries.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, there's no boundaries. There's no... This is right and this is wrong.
Mm.
And yes, I've learned those hard knocks since, you know, millions and millions later where you... Having mm. sampling for so long and trying to get certain things right, you realize that there's certain things that you should have done differently. But it's all part of the learning process, you know. It's
have you ever been co-opted into a brand like Tom Ford?
Look, I love Tom Ford in terms of what they stand for as a brand, in terms of what he does with textile and how he's made such a fantastic name for himself.
Because he started by designing for someone else, right?
Absolutely. And then, you know, he got involved with Xenia. And then, you know, obviously Xenia is all about textile.
Yeah.
And he got in at a time where Xenia was actually on their way. They were skidding. You
yeah.
know? They were not the brand that they envisioned themselves to be what
yeah.
they were once upon a time. And he did marvelously well with them. But then it also gave him an inroads into creating his own textile.
That's right.
Because it's all about textile. I mean, Oswald Boateng was struggling with mills in Italy for years trying to get his textile made, you know? It's an art of its own. And it's, you know, people don't understand when you speak about suiting and you're saying it's made of 100% wool. They immediately think like they're going to be boiling.
Yeah.
But they don't understand the different grammages, grams per square meter, what that actually, how fine that wool can actually be. But the durability of that textile, the durability of fine wool suiting, that can cost you anything from 350 rand a meter to 25,000 to 30,000 rand a meter, knowing that you need 3.5 meters. On
which explains why sometimes you walk into a boutique and you find a blazer is worth 70,000 rand, just
yes.
a blazer.
And yeah, some people think it might be overpriced. Some
yes.
people work on brand legacy, you know, like your big...
brands.
Your big brands.
Luxurious brands,
names,
yeah.
yeah. And then you compare that and people often compare to something that might be made out of a polyviscose, for
yes.
example, and say, but this is looks just as good.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't, because it drapes differently, it behaves differently, and it certainly doesn't have longevity. So my philosophy within this industry...
Oh my word, I'm learning here.
So philosophically, I mean, just my mantra as it is ethical, ecological, and economical, which is eco squared.
Yeah.
Buy less, wear more, and quality over quantity.
Yeah.
So we're in a world of mass consumption at the moment. It's fast food, it's fast fashion, it's
fast everything,
fast living. And... this is constantly accelerated by various different media channels, you know, the likes of social media platforms. You just feel like you cannot keep up. So there's a lot of noise, but not a lot of quality, not a lot of substance out of that.
Sure.
So when you bring that into the space of fashion, it's like, why are we consuming so much, right? Because it's cheap. Since when do you need 10 white shirts when you only use two, kind of thing?
I mean,
back in the day, we used to...
I feel attacked, but it's fine. You
know. No, sir. No, not at all. But you're a smart, consumer, man. Not at all. You see, when we look at it, like look at the cost of clothing in the 90s, for example, versus the cost of clothing now. The cost of clothing in the 90s was far more expensive than it is now.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any economical sense. This era of fast fashion is actually very, very, very destructive. And it's going to come to an end because the fashion industry, clothing and textile industry, is the second or third most polluting industry in the world. Yet we don't get taught these things.
Yeah.
There's no clothing and textile literacy that is that we can learn within or worked into our curriculums within primary or secondary or tertiary school.
Especially to be earth smart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is what we have to be very conscious of moving into the future.
Allow me to be personal.
Please do.
It must be difficult dating you.
Yeah. Fast forward. Next.
Because this man knows the difference between white and white.
Next, please.
Okay. Dennis Williams, Free. I think a song that tells your approach, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, is there something nostalgic about the song?
A combination.
Okay.
You know, approach, nostalgia, everything all in one. But just this, if there's something that she'd done so right, is that you feel this freedom, you know, you hear this echo in the voice where you can imagine yourself in many scenarios.
Yeah.
But I like the nostalgia of it, of course. It's something that resonates with me when I go back in time as a youngster and watching adults dancing or, you know, feeling the vibe a certain time of year just to see happy people. Happy people on the
dance floor. And what music does, man.
What it does, you know, how it feeds you, how it calms you down. Yeah, it just brings you into a space of this, how do I say, this comfort and exhilaration all at the same time. But also very motivating to the creative mind as well.
Now, you spoke about eggs in a basket. I want to know which one egg you felt the pain more because you lost it when it came to that one particular risk you had to take. You'll answer that after this.
Hello, hello. I'm Sheldon Kopman, the founder of Naked Ape, and you're listening to my top 10 at 10.
On the street, on the air.
Yeah, he looks like The Voice. Naked Ape.
Right.
Naked Ape, the name.
Yeah.
Take me there. Why? Why is this ape naked?
It just sounds funny. Let's just start right there.
Yeah, it does.
Because the first time I saw it, I was actually in New York at the time. And it's actually a book written. It's called The Naked Ape by Desmond Morris. And it's a book that I walked by late night one day coming from work in New York, and I walked past this bookshop and I saw this book, and I just laughed because I was like, who'd name a book The Naked Ape? You know, and there's this man holding this ape, and there's a man and an ape, and I'm like, okay, let me check it out. So the next day I went, got the book, read it, and it was quite a controversial book at the time. It's old. It was banned at one stage because people thought it was crossing the line and crossing boundaries when it came to religion and the way we see things to be and, you know, the way science sees it to be. So I said, one day when I get back to South Africa, I'm going to register my company and it's going to be called Naked Ape Fashion Consulting. And that's exactly what I did in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And every time I'd call somebody and say, hi, this is Sheldon from Naked Ape, they'd laugh on the other side of the line. So I'm like, okay, so it's working.
It's working. I mean,
And then
it brings a smile. It brings a chuckle.
And then there was an ad agency. Gavin Reddy Horn, which was Nathan Reddy and his partners.
Yeah.
And there was Cassie Naidu. And they had said, you know what? We really like the name. Can we work on your CI?
Oh.
So they worked on the corporate identity, and they were like, we want to win an award because we like this.
Yeah.
So if you look at the logo is actually a banana because we didn't want to take it that literal. So I had a professional CI from from inception of the business, which was good. And then later on, I registered it as a brand.
Yeah.
So it's really, the book is about evolutionary man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about evolutionary wardrobe.
That's right.
Constantly evolving in the space of wardrobe.
Yeah.
Something that can be purchased and it integrates into your wardrobe and you're able to wear it many times as opposed to a few.
Yeah.
And that's where the quality and all of the quality over quantity comes in, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right, yeah.
And it's a memorable name. That's it.
It really
ultimately
is. It really stands out. Check it out. Go to Instagram, Naked Ape Official. You'll find it. And I see that he's also on Twitter, Naked Ape Fashion. Find it as well. And that is the man, Sheldon. Now, you said I took all my eggs and put them in one basket.
Yeah.
And they all cracked, as in they didn't even yield anything. One of the biggest humbling lessons of your life, right? But definitely there's one egg in there that you were hoping to save or not to lose.
Okay. Yeah, learning. You know, we learn all the time. So those cracked eggs happen twice in a 10-year period. Yeah. And the first time around, it was just pure passion and naivety. So put everything into a collection, imported fabric from France, beautiful collection. And I was pretty much, I had to shut my doors or I had to shrink the company right down to myself and my and a couple of tailors within a 10-day period.
No.
There was hope, though, because, you know, there was the likes of people like Dion Chang, you know, friends like Clive Rundle and so forth, who were like, you know what you did there was special. And I'm like, yeah, but special is not going to pay my bills.
Yes,
right
can
now.
It yield? Yeah.
You know, and I basically stopped. I was producing stills photography shoots. I was producing runway collections. I was still styling. I was doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
And that was what, you know, funded the brand.
Yes.
The birthing
of
the brand. I stopped everything and focused strictly on the brand. So that was one mistake. Because I really, really wanted to get it right. It was driving me absolutely insane till I got it right.
Mm.
And there was a very, very amazing gentleman by the name of Henry Strauss, rest his soul in peace, who flipped my mind completely. He used to be production manager with Clive Rundle. And then he came to do some work with a guy that I was helping out by the name of Philip Dreyer. And Philip just wanted to make suits. So I was helping him with these, with the creativity within his brand. So we were sharing a premises. And Henry just basically said to me, nah, your mind is too powerful. You cannot give up on this. Do it again, but I'll show you how to do it wisely. Make it cheaper in terms of the fabric. Manipulate the textile and enforce your identity. And the next collection was the best collection I'd ever produced.
Come on.
Created a foundation, my identity. Everybody saw me and I said, okay, this is what Sheldon stands for in the industry and this is what we'd look forward to. So there's some of the silhouettes that I'd produced in 2011 and the fabrication that I'd put into those silhouettes that till this day people are asking for. I mean, we're not a mass produced brand.
Yeah, I know. So
So that was the lesson that was taken out of there was the fact that that one egg that was not cracked was the collection that was there, archived, that somebody could come along and say, you know what, you actually know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You just need to work on your fabrication.
And wait, am I right when I say this is the Samuel L. Jackson collection that we saw?
No, before.
Before that?
This was in 2010, right? When the brand was launched, I was on the cover of Private Edition magazine, slapped on the front seats of everybody at Fashion Week, independent show, and I thought that was it.
Yeah.
I've arrived.
Yeah.
And I'm staying. Look, I'm staying, but I'm just not making such a grandiose appearance all the time, you know?
Yeah.
An entrance, at least. The Samuel L. Jackson thing was phenomenal. That was just, you know, a bit of luck and, you know, groundedness. I would say humility was the savior of the day there.
Yeah.
Because he came into the studio and he saw, and he was not happy with what wardrobe was put together for the film. And then he says, I need to see more things. And then they were like, well, come and have a look at what this designer has been working on. And that was a collection from 2011.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
It was winter 2012 collection.
Yes.
And that's what he had seen. And he's like, this is more like it. And because he's a similar size to Runway,
yeah,
you know, a little bit slightly larger in the middle area.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was fitting and he's like, I like this. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
So from two suits for a nostalgic scene that we had made for him, it became the entire film's wardrobe of 12 looks.
Which movie is this?
A Kite.
What?
Yeah. And that was fantastic. And then we got to do the GQ cover
yes,
as well as the spread.
Because we saw the GQ cover.
Yeah, yeah, and he did a nice mention of me there saying that I'm very worthy of his wardrobe. And I mean, he just really liked what was doing. He was a wholesome, wholesome somebody. We're still in touch.
Oh, wow.
I saw him a couple of years ago in Atlanta. I took him some clothes, you know, when he was shooting there. But the fact that he loved clothing so much and he understood it because his mom was in the industry and he was there observing this as a youngster. It really resonated with him. So my whole drive has always been, what's the best quality we can make within our borders? I want our clothes to look as good.
Oh,
our garments need to look as good as what people celebrate in Italy, France, Japan, etc., etc. We need to be able to have that meticulous finishing.
Oh.
The craftsmanship is the artisanal of what we have available to us. They don't have available to them.
Yes.
On a mass scale as we do.
True.
At the cost that we can get it at.
True.
So we can do a lot more with what we have, but we just need to harness and understand where we at in this industry and understand that the lack of availability in textile, the variety of textile, shall I say, should be used to our advantage,
not
to our detriment.
Yes.
You know, use this to our advantage because this is what evokes creativity.
Exactly.
A lack of something will force you to think differently
and
for you to create differently. And, you know, us in South Africa, we're very innovative minded.
Mm.
We're innovative people. We can come up with solutions all the time.
Now, you said that was the first phase. Second phase? The second phase?
Oh, a flagship store set up in Rosebank.
Thought so. Retail.
Retail.
Listen, I mean, this thing is working. Let me put a retail store.
Absolutely. It's the next best step.
The first Rosebank.
Let me put myself in debt. Get some money and let me set up this flagship store. So, optimism, business plan. I had my friend Nsika Masondo. Nsika, man.
Yeah, Nsika.
Nsika. Big shout out, Nsika.
Yeah. What a man.
The guy stuck by. Like, you know, we tried to work this plan in so many different ways. We eventually got something really beautiful. And we needed an investment of so much, and that investment didn't come through. We got a third of that, and we're like, well, we've signed a lease. Let's just get in. Made some of the most beautiful clothes.
Yeah.
You know, like, we said, okay, now we're doing this thing. We're full on in there. Worked without a cash flow. And 6 months down the line, you're like, hey, the reality is we're turning over so much. People are raving about the brand. But then...
they're not buying.
No, they're buying. The thing is, they're buying... we're just not producing enough. So our turnover is not matching our overhead.
Oh my word.
Right.
No.
And I'm like, no, this has to stop. And, you know, we've signed this 3-year lease. I've signed this 3-year lease. I've put everything into it.
Is getting out gonna cost you?
Ooh, it's gonna cost to get out. So you're just gonna stay in, you know, as much you're gonna ride it out. That learning experience is priceless, because that was a point where you start understanding life very differently.
And this is before COVID, by the way.
This is before
COVID. It's not because of COVID.
This is before COVID. So by 2017, you're looking at yourself, you're saying, all right, is this my ego talking to me? Or do I just shut this down? Shut it down. Let it sink and start again. And that was it. But the ego bashed me constantly because I'm like, oh, I'm such a failure. So the biggest lesson out of all of that is, you know, when people say know your lane.
Yeah.
You need to know your lane. Knowing your lane is like, I am a creative. Talk to me about product development.
Yeah.
Talk to me about research.
Yeah.
Talk to me about making beautiful things functional, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Once they're made, I'm bored. I'm moving on to the next thing.
Okay.
You need business in your... You need a business brain in your business.
Yes.
So you need somebody who can understand rands and senses, who understands figures, can say to you, Sheldon, you know what? I know this is what you want, but this doesn't make any financial sense right now. So, of course, you need a proper business partner, somebody who can manage the space, somebody who can CEO the space. I mean, I said to a friend the other day, I said, I'm very, very happy to work in my own business as an employee.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Let me be head of creative. Let me have my design team.
That's right.
Let me craft the way at what I need to do. And please take care of everything else.
Yeah. You know, that, let me do what I do.
Let me do what I do because I've seen and I've fallen a few times and I understand why.
Self-mastery is at the core of this thing.
Absolutely.
And but, I guess, with everything else, right?
Yeah, but, you know, took the ego, put it on the shelf, right? Closed the doors and left it there. And it's there. Yeah. A wave. When smile you, and wave at it every now and again.
When you hear a man say that, you must know he has land. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Yo, Prati. Nah, you're chilling with a legend, man. A brother that I never had. Sheldon took me in after I dropped out from fashion school, where he used to teach styling. He taught me everything I know about fashion, man. I'm grateful for Sheldon, and I wish him all the best, man. He knows. I can't say a lot, man. He knows. This is his young brother that he never had. We did a lot of collections together. Opened up a store together. I learned from his mistakes. I'm the designer that I am today because of him. When he speaks about attention to detail, yeah, he really means it, man. Definitely a man that can spot a white shirt from a white shirt. Definitely. Big brother Sheldon, I love you a lot, my brother. You know who this is, man.
I think you can go home now. It's fine. I think your studio's calling.
It, huh?
Yeah, that's it. After that, I mean, what else is there to do?
Yeah, no, soul to soul.
Soul to soul, man. Now, for those who don't know the man, Instagram, Naked Ape, check it out. And I think you had a podcast chat with Kojo.
Yeah.
Check that out. I think it's Following My Footsteps.
Right.
So check it out. Because you also are talking another dimension of your journey there. And then for those who want more, Ntondo Zana just said, I wish this was 2 hours long.
He's enjoying the music.
Yeah, Phoenix says, I'm trying to listen, but his voice is disturbing me. Phoenix, focus. You just released, I think, for me, your best work yet. SAFW 2025 was for me an out-of-body experience. What you did with that collection, and I think it's the current collection, right? What are you calling that? What is it called?
Oh, that's Urban Camo.
Urban Camo.
Yeah, so...
Oh, that thing is gorgeous,
no,
man.
Thank you. That was a fantastic... It's, you know, when we speak about collaborations and we speak about, you know, harnessing this artisanal skill that we have available in our country... It was a lady that I'd met in 2019 by the name of Ira Becker. So she's one of those, you know, people would call a hippie, but she's just one of these free-spirited individuals that likes to make beautiful things.
Yeah.
And she's all things natural. You know, she's a nature child.
Mm.
And she has a really fantastic technique of using actual botanical matter. So taking leaves and twigs.
Mm-hmm.
And using that to print directly onto the textile.
No.
So when she came around first time in 2019, we did a little something, a little video. And she had basically come back to me years later and say, Sheldon, I've improved so much on my technique. And I'm like, okay, we need to do something about that. There's an opportunity for me to present a collection. Lucilla from SA Fashion Week has called me and she's like, Sheldon, you know what? I've got a slot for you. Do you want to
take it?
And I'm like, called my friend Cizakele,
yeah.
Zah,
yeah.
The Magnificent.
Yeah.
And she's like, you got to do it. And then I called Brian, and Brian was like, you got to do it. Everybody was like, you just got to do it, despite your financial situation. Just do it. You know, keep the momentum. And did it. So the textile is everything.
And guys, you must see it.
Nothing can ever be duplicated. It can be, you can have a variant of that if you like that particular shirt.
Yeah.
You can have the same leaf print, but it's not going to be the same as what you saw. So each and every piece is one of a kind pieces.
By the way, you make, it's custom made, right? Everything.
Almost everything that I do is custom made, bespoke, yeah.
Getting that's the word, by the way, bespoke, yes.
Bespoke, yeah. So getting into a space of more of a commercial venture, which is what I'm absolutely open to. I think it's something I want to do.
Yeah.
But I understand the kind of financial injection that is required.
Yeah.
So do something of a diffuse line. So the brand has legacy. The brand has a good name in the industry. So do a diffuse line whereby people can still buy into the identity and buy into the story and the narrative, but not at the price that you're going to be paying for bespoke.
Yeah.
I'm not pleased about the cost of the garment. I'm very transparent about it. I can tell you why you're paying that amount of money for that particular item. You know, including what the markup is,
yeah,
and what it would be in another country.
That's right.
So we have a nice, we have a wonderful local clientele,
yeah,
and a great international clientele.
Great,
who come and go. You know, captains of industry,
yep.
People who have been purchasers of sort of elitist brands for the longest time, and they've seen what elitist brands have become, and they want to become, they want to be discreet,
yeah.
And unique within a society space.
That's right.
Because you are what you wear.
Yeah.
You know? And as you are what you eat. So it's not by choice. If I had, and we know we've had some eggs that have cracked.
Yeah.
We're not going to make, you know, rash decisions again and think that it's going to work, you know, out of optimism. Calculated wise, I would say yes. Investment comes into the brand, which I'm open to.
Yeah.
I would definitely create a diffuse line without a doubt, you know. And I know,
but
exactly
that Eben Kamwe is everything, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are we able to see it somewhere?
Absolutely. It should be online. Hopefully, my team are listening, so
that collection needs to be showcased. Yeah.
But it's there. It should be within the collections of our nakedapeofficial.com, which is the website, and you'll be able to see a lot more things there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing but the best from me to you, my brother.
Oh, man, nothing but the best from me to you, sir. And thank you very much for
only
this opportunity.
Only a pleasure. I know it's been a long time coming, but I'm glad we finally got to speak about it. And here we are. Now we're talking from experience and lessons. And I think you are a walking book on resilience and trusting that inner voice. It may cost you.
But this is life, you know. We go through hard knocks. If it doesn't make you stronger, then, you know, what are we? Why are we here? What is our purpose?
Yeah.
When do we understand what this purpose of us is in this life? And sometimes
would you design for another house?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
I like that.
I would say more from a creative direction.
Of course, I do.
I mean, I've done for other African brands. I'm always having conversations with youngsters. I'm always motivating this space of creativity, you know. And we keep on keeping on, man, you know, and that's really the nature of this business. It's like people see the glamour and the glitz. They don't understand the tears and the suffering in the back end, where you have the most enormously talented people walking the streets who have everything required to make the most beautiful clothes, the most beautiful garments, the most beautiful collections. Yet they're on the breadline.
Sure. You know? NakedApeOfficial.com. Check it out. Sheldon, keep shining, my brother.
Thank you, brother. Hello, hello. I'm Sheldon Kopman, the founder of Naked Ape, and you're listening to my top 10 at 10.
On the street, on the air. The best tea in the city, Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to midday, on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.